Hey everyone, welcome to the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Dara Cass, editor-in-chief of Feminem.
And I'm Jenny Beck Esme, the other editor-in-chief of Feminem. Now today we're going to bring you another fantastic talk from Fix 17.
But first, Jenny, I have a very exciting announcement.
What?
I have an actual sponsor to promote.
Woo!
So I want to announce, we are so excited for our first official platinum sponsor for Fix 18. It is Rosh Review, www.roshreview. Accidentally, Jenny and my recent success partners in passing the boards and the recertification. Congratulations, Jenny.
Thank you very much. I will say, to Rosh's credit, the score that my question bank predicted that I would get on the test was identical to the score I got on the test.
And I will say that it was not true for me. The question bank told me I was going to get 2 points higher, but both were passing scores. And when you're recertifying, you actually very much only care about that P equals MD.
Absolutely.
Rosh Review is actually not just a platinum sponsor for the conference, which is super exciting, but they are sponsoring the Mommy and Me room on the second floor of the venue, which means that all of the parents, not just mommies, but parents out there who are coming to the conference, who want to bring their child, we are going to have a room dedicated to childcare with in proximity of the lecture. So thank you to Rosh Review, our first official sponsor for Fix 18. And when is Fix 18, Jenny?
Well, Fix 18 is going to be October 16th through the 18th, 2018. Put it on your calendar. It's going to be in New York City again. It's at the New York Academy of Medicine, which is a stunning site up on Fifth Avenue in the Museum Mile area. Everyone's going to love the Upper East Side. For all the details, make sure to go to the website, feminem.org/fix18, and watch there for announcements and ticket sales and all of that other stuff. Am I forgetting anything?
Well, actually, yeah, we're trying to get it in. Don't forget that the call for speakers is still open now that Christmas has passed, but before the new year, make sure to go to www.feminem.org on the Fix 18 tab, submit your talk, make sure to get it in before January 5th. That's the deadline before we take all of our submissions and look through all the goods and figure out exactly who's going to speak at Fix 18.
And that is super soon.
Get these in. And don't forget to go to the Feminem shop and the Feminem bookstore. Easy to find on the website. Pick up some early presents because you can never be too early for holiday season 2018.
don't forget that you have them when holiday season 2018 rolls around.
You know, it's funny. I'm not an early shopper ever, but in theory, this would be the perfect opportunity to do so.
It would be. So next, we're going to have our talk from Dr. Allison Haddock. Dr. Haddock is an assistant professor and the director of health policy advocacy in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine. She is super involved in the American College of Emergency Physicians for many years now in lots of different roles. But recently, she was elected to the ASEP Board of Directors, which is super exciting.
Yeah, actually, the coolest part about Allison's election onto the board wasn't just that she was another female elected to the board and that she has a huge amount of health policy advocacy behind her, but it actually continued a trend of young people being elected to the board, which is exciting. And Jenny and I both, I think, can speak strongly about the idea of getting more women in leadership. Jenny, do you have any feelings on this?
I have very strong feelings on this. I think that more women in leadership in all roles in the entire universe is just going to make the universe a better place.
Yes. Jenny and I clearly agree with that.
Universe a better place. Run for office.
Make the universe a better place. Feminem out. if anyone out there is thinking about doing anything on the small scale, large scale, and we can help in any way, tweet us, call us, text us, show up at our houses. We will canvass. We will phone bank, we will door to door. We are very excited to support anyone out there who's interested in any position that can make a better place and increase the utility of this planet.
Absolutely. So now here is Allison's talk. Don't just get mad, get involved. Advocacy for the Feminem.
So to set the stage, I'm going to take us back in time. We talked earlier today about some of the negative actions of the AMA towards Black physicians. This is a record that they recorded in 1961. 56 years ago. So this was one of Ronald Reagan's very first political activities. He was just an actor back in 1961. And he was hired by the AMA to record a record speaking out against Medicare. Medicare, to cover people over age 65, was just being proposed back in 1961. So the AMA recorded this record to distribute to their Ladies Auxiliary, the wives club of the AMA, so that they could play it at their coffee meetings and talk about how Medicare would be, you know, the destruction of America. But where are we today? Things have changed. The AMA has been adaptive. It's been almost like a living organism, changing and growing with time. And in the last couple of weeks, we saw them speaking out very vocally against the efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act. I've taken some liberties with this screen grab from Jimmy Kimmel and added in the American College of Emergency Physicians as well. But really, all the medical associations stood in opposition to the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. These are tectonic changes for an organization like the AMA in particular, I think. And these changes happened because of people like us, people like you, getting more involved in these organizations. So to talk a little bit more about how to do that, I'm going to take us back and paint the landscape a little bit of health policy today, because I think we all feel a little bit more confident about getting involved in these organizations if we can speak confidently about the issues. So things changed a lot back in 2010 when Obamacare was passed, the Affordable Care Act. Most of the implementation didn't happen until 2014, so that's when we started seeing big changes. And an easy way to think about all the parts of the Affordable Care Act, and I can't possibly discuss all of them, but like the major components, is to think of them as having two parts, two pillars, the coverage expansion and the insurance regulation. So the coverage expansion happened a few different ways. One is the individual mandate, so requiring everyone to have some kind of healthcare coverage and having a tax penalty if they don't. Another is the employer mandate, so any employer with over 50 employees now has to offer health insurance to their employees. And then a big part of it was Medicaid expansion. So the Medicaid expansion was intended to cover everyone up to 138% of the federal poverty line in all of the states. And to go with that, we also had insurance regulation. And the most important part of this that gets discussed the most is the mandatory coverage for pre-existing conditions. And that's really dependent on the individual mandate. Because if you're going to have mandatory coverage for pre-existing conditions, you also have to have a way to get healthy people into the insurance market. Otherwise, you have the death spiral where only unhealthy people are getting insurance and it becomes unviable. Once you have that, though, you can have things like a ban on limits on lifetime spending so that a NICU baby who runs up a big bill in their first few months of life isn't then without coverage for the rest of their life. And one thing that I think is very important for us to know about as emergency physicians are the 10 essential health benefits. So prior to 2014, you could have a product that you called insurance that didn't cover things like maternity care, didn't cover mental health, and even didn't cover emergency care. So emergency care is one of the 10 essential health benefits, and all the attempted repeals of the Affordable Care Act have been eliminating that requirement. I want to go back and talk about Medicaid expansion a bit more quickly, because as emergency physicians, we see more uninsured patients and more Medicaid patients than pretty much any other specialty. The pediatricians might almost have us with Medicaid, but not with the uninsured. So the Medicaid expansion has made a big difference for us. So the states went to the Supreme Court and said, we don't like this Medicaid expansion, and won that case, which is why the Medicaid expansion is uneven. This was never the plan of the authors of the Affordable Care Act that we would have this happen. So if you're in a light-colored state, you haven't seen as big changes as those in the dark-colored states. And this has had a big impact in the emergency department. So this is from a study of a large number of visits from a large number of physician billing companies, and they looked at what happened in Medicaid expansion states versus non-expansion states. And they found that in expansion states, we saw a significant rise in the number of Medicaid visits and a significant drop in the number of uninsured visits. We saw that as a trend in non-expansion states. All this publicity brought some people out of the woodwork to enroll in Medicaid, but it was not as decisive, definitely, as expansion states. What we also know with regards to Medicaid expansion is from a study that was done in 2012, looking at efforts prior to the Affordable Care Act to expand Medicaid in different states, is that there's a number needed to treat with health insurance, typically Medicaid, to prevent deaths. And that number needed to treat is 445. So for every 445 people you insure, that year you will prevent a death. So never mind preventing hospitalizations or diagnoses of illness, but actually death. This is saving people's lives when we're increasing insurance coverage. But there's a lot of uncertainty right now in what's going to happen in the next few years. Will Trump Care replace Obamacare? This article's from March 2017, but we all know this article could have been written 2 weeks ago as well, 1 week ago. This is an ongoing effort to fulfill the promises that were laid out in some people's political campaigns and repeal the Affordable Care Act. The problem with this is that the Affordable Care Act is kind of like a game of Jenga. We were talking about all of those different components earlier, and all of the components really are dependent on each other. So the individual mandate is pretty unpopular with a lot of people, but if you pull out that individual mandate, what happens to the rest of it? What happens to all the requirements for coverage? What happens to coverage for pre-existing conditions? It's hard to keep everything stable. But one of the problems is we don't necessarily have to see legislative action to see some big changes in the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. There's some significant power in the executive branch that could have a big impact in years to come. So they're reducing publicity for enrollment in the marketplace, so we might get fewer people, you know, fulfilling the individual mandate because of that. They have the power to maybe even eliminate the tax penalties. It's controversial if you don't have insurance. They're cutting funding for healthcare navigators that help people who are less savvy get enrolled in health insurance. So we could see some big changes even without legislative action, which is why we need to make sure that our organizations are being so vocal to support coverage. And then there's some specific issues for emergency medicine that I think we need to address as well. So prudent layperson, the prudent layperson standard, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with, is actually one of the big success stories for physician advocacy and especially for emergency medicine advocacy. So 20 years ago, a lot of places were seeing insurance companies rejecting bills for emergency visits and trying to put it back on the patients because the patients were ultimately diagnosed with a condition that the insurance company said, well, that's not an emergency. So this is the classic, like, patient comes in with chest pain, you do the cardiac workup, they're okay, and you say they have gastritis as their ultimate diagnosis is what caused the chest pain. Well, the insurance company goes, well, gastritis isn't an emergency condition. Someone with an ankle injury diagnosed with a sprain instead of a fracture, they say, well, that's not an emergency condition. You didn't need to be seen that day for that. So 20 years ago, we were able to get laws passed both at the state level and the federal level enshrining prudent layperson in law. But unfortunately, in the past 3 years, we've been seeing a lot of activity to roll that back. We've been seeing states for their Medicaid populations saying, we don't want to cover visits for non-emergency conditions, and we've even seen private insurance companies saying they don't want to cover non-emergency conditions. And this is retroactive determinations, not determinations based on if a prudent layperson has symptoms of sufficient severity that they think they're having an emergency. So this is something that we're currently fighting for. And that fight is going on both at ACEP and the AMA. So before I get started on this part, for some of you, this is going to be remedial. But for those of you who aren't as involved in ACEP, I want to lay out a little bit of a game plan for how you can potentially get more involved. So if anyone, I would like everyone here to raise their hands and keep them up. If they're a past or current ACEP counselor, ACEP chapter board member, or ACEP committee member. I think it's going to be quite a few of you. So I want those of you who aren't involved yet to look around, see who's sitting next to you that's raising their hands, and know that these are folks that can serve as a resource for you if you want to get more involved. So I'm going to talk a bit about ACEP, but also about AMA, and then about my personal participation in the TMA. The involvement through the AMA generally occurs through your counties and through your states, so it's important to know what programs your state is offering to get more involved. But the reason I think it's important for us to get involved in these organizations is that when a whole bunch of doctors come together and speak as a voice, as an organization, our legislators really listen. It's very influential when you see this many white coats in a Capitol building. And when you survey the public, physicians are listed as one of the most trusted professions in America out of all possible professions. So there's a real opportunity for us to speak with a united voice and progress the conversation. And if you're a member of one of these organizations, they're your organization. They are out to represent you and to serve you. So if you have a concern that an issue that's important to you is not being addressed, I want you to feel empowered to talk to the leaders, talk to the staff at your organization and express your concern. So if, for example, you'd like to see more being done on gun control, you can email and that will be seen and heard by the leaders of the college, particularly ACEP, but also in the AMA. So on the ACEP Contact Us page, you can always email membership@acep.org, and they'll forward your email to the right place. Or you can email the president, you can email the executive director of the organization, and say, as a member of your organization, I'm concerned that we're not addressing this issue, and I would like to see it addressed, and I'd like to know what you're going to do to address it in the future. But I also want to encourage you to just show up at some meetings, because I think there's a lot of power to just showing up. And I think as women, we have a little bit more of a tendency to look to be invited. And I want to encourage everyone to not wait to be invited to start just showing up. So this is a hypothetical meeting place for one of the committees, the board, and your seat can be there. So I'll say at most ASAP meetings, there's kind of a central table where the members of the committee sit, and then there's a ring of seats around the edge of the room for guests. And ASAP committee meetings are open to the public, so I encourage you to find a seat around the edge of that room and observe the committee. So the committees that are most involved in advocacy for ASAP are the Federal Governmental Affairs Committee and the State Legislative Committee. And we can't all get placed on those committees tomorrow. I'll tell you my personal first experience in asking to be placed on the Federal Governmental Affairs Committee was I talked with an ASAP leader about being really passionate about health policy. I was a resident and said that I would like their consideration to be appointed to this committee and all the reasons why I had knowledge and interest. And I was told, well, that's not really a committee for residents. And, you know, that's not really something that can happen right now. It's a very exclusive committee. Why don't you look to things that are less exclusive? So I took that advice and got involved in some other ways, but I also started just showing up to those committee meetings. So they're open. You're a member, you can show up. So after the meetings, I would go ask a question of some of the senior leadership or the staff and say, what about this issue, what about that issue, and that kind of thing gets noticed. So then in future years, you do get put on the committee. ASAP sections are another opportunity as well, although I will say they're not as involved in sort of the policy and advocacy of the college, so that's why I'm, for the purposes of this talk, directing you specifically towards the committees. But they are another great way to get involved in the pipeline to leadership. Also, ASAP board meetings are open to the public. They have them about quarterly. They're mostly at the headquarters in Dallas, so if you're local to that area, that's obviously easier to you. But they also hold meetings at the annual conference that are, again, open to the public. You can observe and speak up. That's our current ASAP board right there. The council meeting is another great opportunity. So the council meeting takes place the day before the educational part of the ASAP annual meeting. I imagine a lot of you go to the ASAP annual meeting, so I'd encourage you to think about flying in a day early and just attending even a half day of council. So to be seated as a delegate, you have to be a representative of your state, so a counselor or an alternate counselor from your state. But there are, again, seats in the back where members are totally welcome to come and observe the deliberations on resolutions, where we're talking about advocacy issues and the way the college runs, and then electing our next board of directors. So I think it's a great opportunity and something that I would love to see more women consider. The council's about 25% female, which isn't terribly far off representation in, you know, our specialty, but I would certainly like to see it bumped up. So state and AMA opportunities are a little bit more local, and I am less deeply involved in the AMA, although I've been getting involved more in recent years. So this is great for those of you who may be less willing or less interested or less able to travel for whatever reason, because there may be meetings going on right in your hometown. So in the bigger cities in particular, the bigger counties, there can be a very, very active county AMA chapter that has a bunch of meetings where you can go and have an influence on the dialogue. Another opportunity that's present in multiple states that was a great opportunity for me is the Leadership College. So there's a lot of Leadership College, leadership development, leadership whatever programs in various states around the country. I did some Googling and it seems like they're fairly widespread, although not present in every single state. So I got involved in the TMA's leadership development program, the Leadership College, and I felt like it was a great opportunity to build leadership skills that helped me with my regular career as well as with my TMA-AMA career. So it kind of has a double effect and helps you build some of the skill set that can benefit you in all of your jobs. So again, I want to emphasize the importance of just showing up and tell a little bit of my story of just showing up along with the Federal Governmental Affairs Committee story. So I moved to Texas about 2.5 years ago, and I didn't know a whole lot of people in Texas, but I did enroll in the TMA Leadership College, which was a great experience, and I started getting the emails. So Texas only has legislative sessions every other year, and this past year was a legislative session. So they were sending out emails like every day, here's what's going on in the legislature, and here's what the TMA is doing to represent you. So they sent out an email talking about Medicaid. Medicaid's a big issue in a lot of states because the budget's so big. And they were saying, in response to the issues with Medicaid, we're forming a task force between the TMA and the THA, the Texas Hospital Association. And we're going to look at ways we can improve Medicaid, cut the bureaucracy, improve care, and also look at cutting back on unnecessary emergency department visits. So I'm like, okay, that's interesting. It's the hot topic, definitely something we need to watch out for the prudent layperson issue. So I emailed the leaders of the Texas College of Emergency Physicians, and I said, who from emergency medicine is representing us on this task force? Because we're the only kind of care that they're singling out when they're talking about their objectives for this group. So they looked into it and they said, well, nobody from emergency medicine was going to be representing us on this task force, but how would you like to be our representative? So, of course, I said yes, and so then I became the representative to this task force that's half filled with hospital CEOs, because that's who the THA is, and then a lot of senior leaders in the TMA. So I was slightly intimidated, but also excited to be able to have a voice for emergency medicine in this group. So then when the Better Care Reconciliation Act was being considered over the summer, John Cornyn is the second in command, basically, of the Senate. He's just below Mitch McConnell as the majority whip, and he's one of our representatives in Texas. So this task force arranged a meeting with him to talk about our collective concerns about particularly what the Medicaid cuts would do for the state of Texas. So an email went out saying, who can be there in 2 days in Austin at 9 a.m. to meet with John Cornyn and talk about our concerns? So I was able to scramble my schedule and go. I was the only woman at this meeting, the only emergency physician at this meeting, and there were about 10 of us talking with John Cornyn about what our concerns were about the bill. Now, I'm not sure he then went and, you know, scratched it out and redrafted it, made amazing changes, but I was still really proud to have the opportunity to represent the voice of emergency physicians and our concerns for our patients at that time. So I want to leave you with a little bit of an action plan for what you can do, because I want to make sure this isn't just ideas, that you have some concrete thoughts about what you can do to get more involved. So I encourage you to attend a meeting. So I think some of the best meetings are the ASAP meeting, but actually attend part of the council or a board meeting while you're at ASAP, or a committee meeting, or the leadership and advocacy meeting in DC in the spring is another great opportunity to learn more about ASAP's advocacy agenda and observe those committee meetings and get more involved. And if attending a meeting isn't something that feels appropriate to you, look for those local meetings too with your county medical society, another great opportunity. But your voice can still be heard. These membership organizations want to retain members, they want to recruit members, and they want to have members feel like their voices are being heard. So if you feel like an issue is not being addressed, don't hesitate to talk to the leaders that you know within the organization and send in those emails. Because I can tell you, if ASAP receives 50 emails about an issue from their membership, that's a lot of emails. They may have almost 40,000 members, but people aren't always that active in speaking up and letting their voice be heard. So I hope that this talk has inspired you to feel a little bit more like ASAP and the AMA aren't monolithic organizations, that they aren't set in stone and in their ways forever, even if some of those ways in the past have not been the best ways. But instead, they're plastic, they're evolving, and that we can have an influence on those organizations. So by being involved and having a voice, I think this is a way that you can find greater fulfillment in your career and a way to achieve accomplishments for society and for all emergency patients. So it's been a really fulfilling part of my career, and I encourage you all to just show up and get involved and let your voice be heard. Thank you very much.